You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what is going on, everybody? I hope all is good in your neck of the woods. I'm really excited to get this episode started for you. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Steve's a great guy, and we had a great conversation. But I do have just a few little tidbits of house cleaning I want to get to before we jump right in. So, first off, last week I asked for a couple of reviews, and you guys slid in there and made that happen. So, big thank you to the folks. We're now sitting at 103 reviews on iTunes, and that just tickles me pink. So a big thank you is in order for everyone who did that. And if you haven't yet, more iTunes reviews certainly does not hurt. So if you feel like doing that, wonderful. And just one last thing before we get into the show today. If you are subscribed to the Tone Mob newsletter, then you already know about this. But I want to tell you about something that our friends the Effects Loop podcast, are doing for the month of September, which is almost over. They are putting on a raffle to benefit the Autism Self-Advocacy Network. We've got prizes up for grabs from Big Ear Pedals, Gun Street Wiring Shop, 1981 Inventions, Yellow Cake Pedals, G7th Capos, String Joy, Westminster Effects, Rare Buzz Effects, and Like My Pedals. So it's just another one of those really cool things that the people in the gear community have put together and are doing to help other people, and I think that's just fantastic. You can find the link in the show notes, or you can go to go.rallyup.com/autismrocks. That's go.rallyup.com/autismrocks, and the link for that will be in the show notes as well. So yeah, that's all I have for today, and we'll just go ahead and get right into this episode with Steve. All right, bye. Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Tone Mob Podcast, the show about guitar tone and the people behind it. I'm your host, Blake Weiland, and with me today, I have Steve Demidash from Demidash Effects. How's it going, man?
Hi. Good. Good.
Normally I ask how to pronounce things before, and I was going to do that with you, but I forgot, and I just figured, you know what, I'm fairly confident in this, so I'm just going to
Wait, how did you say it? I didn't catch it.
I said Demidash, is that right?
You got it.
Yes.
Yeah, only like a third of people get that right the first time. It's hard to tell based on how it's written.
I felt pretty good about it, and the fact that I'd heard it said a bunch of times from other people. So there's that.
Oh, really? Okay, fair enough.
Well, you know, I'm obsessed with pedals, so of course I'd heard it a time or two.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think I've ever been in a video where I've said it, so it's just good luck that, you know, people have said it right enough times that people know how it's said.
It's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get Wayland a lot. I'm like, Blake Wayland. Like, there's no A there, but hey, you know?
Oh, wait. How do you say it?
Wyland.
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 Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
It's close enough to Wayland, and, you know, I'm a Wayland fan, so that feels fine. I'll go with it.
Yes.
So tell me about yourself, Steve. Like, what's your musical backstory? How did you get to making pedals and, you know, VHS bass pedals at that? Like, what, how did that happen?
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like a series of kind of coincidences, I guess, or happy accidents. You know, I started, I'm an electrical engineer. But from an artistic family. So I went into engineering. Just kind of like, I want to learn how amps work.
Okay.
And, you know, kind of needed an education. So that seemed like a good way to go, you know, kill two birds with one stone. So I did that, and when I was in university, I was kind of recording myself. You know, I've got a big backlog of songs I've written, and my friend lent me these really nice microphones. So I started recording over the summer a bunch of these songs that I'd written, just, you know, kind of for my own thing. I'd never really gotten out there and tried to advertise my own music, but, you know, it was kind of a fun thing to do for myself. And I kind of wanted a bunch of different, you know, guitar sounds, and I couldn't afford amps at the time. Or a bunch of different, you know, vintage amps, being a student. So I started building myself, you know, pedals that kind of sounded like amps, you know, amp in a box style, you know, from any layouts that were out there from, you know, just on the internet, and realized I really liked doing that. So I kind of got distracted from the whole recording aspect and started doing that more. And, you know, I kind of did that off on and off for a few years, selling just on Kijiji, which is basically like a Canadian Craigslist. And, you know, like just, you know, selling things for, you know, pretty cheap, like under $100 when I was done something. I graduated, started working, as an electrical engineer, software engineer. And then last year, I was like, well, you know, kind of started getting back into, you know, music and wanted to buy some more, you know, gear. So I was like, well, you know, maybe build some more pedals, you know, just sell them, just to make a bit of side cash, just to make, you know, dumb purchases.
Yeah.
Totally. And so I did that, and I had sold something on Reverb recently before, and before, like, selling things on the internet kind of seemed sketchy, but after that, I was like, oh, that was a totally fine experience, whatever. Yeah, sure. So I started doing that with the pedals I was making, and, you know, around the same time, I was getting a tire changed, my tire had blown, and I was just waiting in the car shop for them to, you know, put it on a new tire, and I was kind of bored going through, and I had an Instagram that I hadn't used in, like, 2 years. So I started, uploading pictures to it of, you know, some of the builds I had been doing and, you know, switched it over to, I started calling myself Demodash Effects. I figured I'd need a name and, just used my last name because I couldn't think of anything that wasn't a really bad pun, you know, as a business name.
What was one of those early pun ideas? What was it?
Acetone, but I would pronounce it acetone.
Ah, just, gotcha.
You know, okay. Terrible stuff. I tried not to let my sense of humor get in the way of things, but, you know, I lucked out with that one. Just keep being able to use a unique last name, which, you know, it is my legitimate last name, so that worked out.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, I mean, just kind of did that, and you just kind of started blowing up, you know, pretty steadily. I was just doing, like, you know, modified clones or whatever. Like, you know, I'm an engineer, but at this point, nobody knows who I am, so I'm not going to be able to market any original designs because nobody wants something, you know, some crazy fuzz circuit that some no name with no credentials has, you know, kind of dreamed up. So, you know, it's just kind of whatever, just, you know, slightly modified clones. And when I was in university, I ran the humor, magazine for the Department of Engineering, kind of the engineering student humor magazine. And I picked up a lot of graphic design stuff and programs that way. And, you know, I'm from an artistic family. My parents work at the theater center here in Manitoba. So, you know, I've kind of got the eye for it. And so that was kind of like another thing. Once I figured out how to use, like, water slide decals and apply those, I was able to, you know, create artwork for these things. So that became kind of the fun thing to do, was just putting new artwork on each new pedal. And, you know, from that, you know, my Instagram, you know, starts getting kind of interesting. And so I'm doing that for a while. And then, you know, I had the idea for the VHS one. So I did that. And the graphic came before the idea for the sound. Like, you know, the graphic inspired the sound. I was like, oh, that would look really cool. How do I make it sound like that? Like it looks. And so I kind of did that. And it sort of started off as a modified Keeley Mag Echo, I think it was.
Okay.
And, you know, just kind of evolved from there. So it was like kind of that for like the first, you know, one or two. And then I started adding stuff and subtracting stuff and kind of just morphing it into this own thing, trying to get that real garbled sound rather than just, a, you know, echo.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, like I still do that to this day. Like I probably revise my circuits every, you know, 40 boards, every 40 units, you know, make a little change. Yeah. Yeah. I generally don't announce it because it's, you know, it's just little small stuff that, you know, it's not like an added control or anything. I don't really want to add any controls because I really like how it looks. So I don't want to like mess up the graphic. But little things. Like the most recent one is a wet dry blend. So now you can mix it fully wet, like on all of them. So yeah, little things like that.
Gotcha. That's interesting that you said that it started life as a Keeley Mag Echo, because you think about the history of Keeley and how inspirational and how many like and how many companies have shot off of Keeley and like how important Keeley has been, the man and the company, to this industry.
He started off as a modder and, you know, an engineer, so that's
I'm seeing a connection here is where I was going with that. Yeah, he started exactly the same, modding and with an electronics engineering background, so that's kind of a interesting parallel, I guess I would say.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, it's not the kind of thing like I don't announce that and put it out there on my site because, you know, I don't want to use the Keeley name because I feel like, you know, he wouldn't want that. But yeah, it's not,
and
not
it's like I'm trying not to hide what it is anymore. The origin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not trying to hide the origins or anything, but yeah. Yeah, I don't really advertise it either.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So did you have Keeley products? Like what did you start? You know, you started building pedals, you kind of laid that out, but when did you get into effects? Like, did you start building before you got into the pedal game, or were you a collector? How did that happen?
I mean, I had a few like cheapies, basically. Like I said, I got into it when I was a student. So I had like, you know, a Tube Screamer. I had, I think like a Boss Octave one, you know, nothing crazy.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just a couple of cheapies. I can't even remember. I think I've, you know, traded them all away at this point. So, and I'm looking at my pedal board beside me. I'm like, no, none of these are all crazy.
What's on it now?
It's kind of a mess right now. I haven't played in a little while. Actually I've still got my, it's a Boss Bass Parametric EQ. So they don't make it anymore. I got it from a guy who was selling a bass that I got for my brother for his birthday. And he had this pedal that was made in the 90s and super cool. So like, I don't know, held onto that. That was kind of cool. Got Pettyjohn Gold, one of the 1981 drives, Cali 76, one of the Dr. Scientist BitQuests. I've got my two, the 112 Plus and the T120. I've got a T-Rex Replicator, Stramadico, Eventide H9, Tonesar, Halo Phase. What else is there? Oh, 6 Degrees FX 11. Yeah. Yeah. I've got a bunch scattered around as well, but
yeah.
That seems to be what's there right now.
Nice. That's definitely a big upgrade from a couple cheapies and a Voss pedal or whatever.
That you... Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't buy pedals much. I don't buy pedals as much anymore, but when I do, my wallet feels it.
Yeah. Yeah. But you get good ones. So. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of whatever. Like the Space Echo I bought recently.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, yeah, like legit. Yeah, I got a Space Echo.
Tell me more. And please.
I picked up. Oh, it sounds great. I mean, I haven't had as much time to play with it as I'd like, but yeah, I know. I'd like to replace the tape on it. It sounds a little bit old, but I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but yeah, got that. And I got a Magnatone, like late 50s, early 60s Magnatone with a pitch vibrato, which was great. Like it was really beat up when I got it. So I had to do a lot of repair on it, but you know, I really like doing that kind of thing. So I was happy to do it, but I got it for about a third of the price I would have paid for a, you know, fully pristine one. So I like it. I like it a lot.
I kind of like, I have a thing for beat up old gear. Like I was looking at the Fender Super 6, I think is what it's called. Those big, huge, tall 6-speaker combo amps. I don't know.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, they're completely ridiculous. I don't know why they were ever made, honestly, but they look really cool. And I've seen some really clean ones, but I think they just look way cooler with like a little bit of hole in the grill and like a little bit of Tolex peeling away. Like they've seen some action.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, the Magnatone looks like it, and I don't know if I want to fix that part of it up.
Yeah,
you know, I refurbished the insides really nicely, but yeah, I don't know about the outside. I kind of like it.
Yeah, that's cool. Can you I don't think a lot of people know about the old Magnatone stuff. Can you explain what makes it so cool?
Okay, so vibrato is kind of a weird word when you're talking about amps, because Leo Fender decided to make it really confusing for everybody.
Yes.
So like on the Fender amps, you have vibrato, and really it's tremolo. It's, you know, a pitch, not a pitch, it's an amplitude variation. So it's like, it's going louder and quieter, louder and quieter. And, you know, if you're not really listening closely, that can sound like, you know, pitch variation, but you know, it's not. And then there was a really short time for Fender amps where they had a brown face, which was harmonic tremolo, which really does kind of sound like pitch vibrato, because it's alternating between a high pass and a low pass filter. So you're going like high, low, pitch isn't changing, just the amount, like the frequency content is,
right?
You know, it's alternating, but these Magnatones are, you know, they're the only amps out there from that era that had a way to get the pitch to actually vary. And they did it by using these things called varistors, which are used for surge protection. So, you know, a really high voltage comes in and the resistance increases, which, you know, in surge protection, you know, that's good because, you know, not as much current can get through. But the way they're used in this is like you've got an LFO that, you know, it's making just a waveform. I believe it's triangular or sinusoidal. And it's going up and down. And that's kind of fed to these things and making very resistance up and down, up and down. And so you've got two phase inverted versions of the signal, one from the plate and one from the cathode of the tube. And it's basically varying which one is being sent to the output, you know, alternating back and forth. And that's kind of similar to, you know, with using an echo line, like an analog vibrato. You know, you're shifting back and forth, like how much time it takes for the stuff to get through the echo line. So, you know, it's, you've got your samples coming in, and as they come out, you, you know, stretch them apart and push them together, and you get this Doppler effect, you know, long, like further apart, it makes the pitch go down, closer together, it makes the pitch go up. And so the kind of analog here is on the magnetone. Instead of doing that, it's just kind of moving where the peak of the waveform is, you know, it's, they're 180 degrees out of phase. So if, while you're alternating from one to the other, you're, it's almost like you're moving it back and forth. And that almost kind of sounds like you're stretching and compressing the waveform, which gives you the kind of psychological interpretation that it is varying in pitch. And without a diagram, whatever I just said is probably really confusing.
But I think I understand it actually, which is really very shocking. Okay. I think I'm with you.
Okay, good. Yeah, hopefully that kind of made some sense. But that's sort of my understanding of it, at least. Somebody else could probably give you a more thorough explanation, tell you why I'm completely wrong. But no, after like looking at the schematic and really analyzing it and reading a bit about it, that's kind of my understanding of it.
This is fun to talk to somebody who kind of knows down to the nuts and bolts layer, because a lot of people, they start as players and modders without the background. Do you feel like having that engineering background has been very helpful, or do you think like it's a little bit of like, I've heard some people think like, oh yeah, but you can't think creatively. And I'm like, well, I don't think that's necessarily true. What's your take on it?
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, they can't think creatively. That's kind of dumb. I mean, yeah, like engineers and typical, you know, they're not the most creative people, but you know, like I said, I'm from a more artistic background. So I was more of like, you know, the odd man out in engineering, where I'm the creative guy who got an engineering education. So, you know, yeah, if somebody's an engineer through and through, you know, maybe that's sort of part of their personality. But having that kind of education doesn't make you not creative. It just kind of gives you a better understanding of what's going on. You know, that's all it is. So I definitely think it helped me, but maybe not as much as most people would think it would. I mean, modern engineering is more about digital signal processing and, you know, digital control systems and stuff. Most of, like, musical effect technology is based on stuff from the 50s through the 90s. So, you know, that's not really taught in school anymore. It definitely gave me, like, a fundamental kind of understanding of, you know, semiconductor theory and the kind of the physics of it. And that allowed me to kind of apply it as I was learning more and kind of get a deeper understanding. But a lot of the learning I did on my own, out of my own curiosity, you know, after the fact, once I started getting more into effects. So yeah, it's a mix of both for sure, but it helped give me the fundamentals for sure.
That's interesting that I didn't even think about that. That the same stuff that like, for instance, Keeley went to school for is not the same stuff that it was. Maybe even the same classes would have completely different material because things have changed so much.
Oh yeah, there was like two pages in one of my textbooks about vacuum tubes. That's the most exposure we got to it in school. Like, it's old technology, kept alive probably purely for audiophile stuff and guitar apps.
So what is your take on that? Do you think that it is possible to recreate some of that, the, you know, quote unquote tube goodness that we've come to love with modern technology?
I mean, probably, but why? It's fun to have.
It's a good point.
You know, feeling is half of it. You know, if you like the feeling of playing through tubes and the knowledge that you're playing through tube amp, then it's doing its job. Yeah. It doesn't need to be replicated. I mean, it's great that it can be, and that serves its purpose for some people. But personally, like, I know it doesn't matter, but I really do like playing through tube app just because I know I'm playing through tube app. It's just kind of the knowledge makes it more enjoyable. And it's totally psychological.
It's kind of like having a different colored guitar. And it's like, yeah. I like the white one better, and therefore I'm going to play better and think that it's better just because.
Oh, it's absolutely. White. And you know, I've built like a bunch of amps for myself. I built like 3 amps for myself and, you know, fixed up a bunch of other ones. And, you know, I use, you know, nice, high quality, like expensive parts in them, knowing that cheaper ones would be fine in the circumstances I'm using them. But, you know, it's like, I like the idea of using the, you know, nice stuff. And that's okay. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's my money. I'm doing what I want with it. I'm the one that's going to be playing it. And I feel like, you know, people are totally welcome to do that. It's kind of when you get people who, like, you know, extol the virtue of Mojo parts to others that maybe, you know, that person wouldn't care otherwise, but they think they're actually going to get a tonal difference out of it that really matters. That's when it kind of gets, you know, not as friendly and, you know, that's more of a gray area, I'd say.
Yeah, like, oh, you would have a lot of insight to some of that stuff too, I imagine. I my theory, without being a builder or engineer or anything, my theory has always been with certain things, like resistors is always the one I go to. As long as the resistor is resisting the amount that it's supposed to resist, what's it going to really do for you? Like making sure it's carbon comp. That's what I've always thought. Is that an accurate way to think, or what's your take on it?
Basically, all components are context dependent. So yes, like in a pedal, yeah, it's pretty much, yeah, correct. In an amp, yeah, there's some variation. Like carbon comp resistors can definitely be noisier. So having them in the signal path isn't always great, especially in like a high gain amp. I read some, you know, thing, somebody had done some research on this, and I can neither quote where I heard this. So this is basically hearsay for, you know, all intents and purposes. But I do recall reading an article where somebody had done some analyses, like frequency analysis and transient analysis of it, and found the only place where a carbon comp resistor actually does add some harmonic sweetness to the sound is as a plate load resistor. So, you know, I kind of make a point of doing that in the amps I build. It's like, yeah, it's kind of neat.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Were there any theories as to why, or can you remember?
It's because I believe the higher voltage being applied across it. You know, there's a very high voltage being applied across it, you know, on the order of a few hundred volts. And it's varying a lot, you know, as your signal goes through that, that voltage level varies. So, you know, there's with a high voltage level and the big variation, it's maybe there's a bit of inductance in there that kind of, you know, frequency selective response is what you're getting out of it.
Okay.
I believe that's the case.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Huh.
But I mean, you know, it wasn't much, you know, it's just a little bit, but again, they look super cool. And so.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. So if that matters to you, then it matters.
I've come to realize how many things in my life, when I was a teenager and when I was younger, I pretended that like looks and appearance didn't matter to me that much. Kind of like most dudes, like, oh yeah, what do I care? Like, it's just a whatever, you know, like I don't care.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
I'm so cool. Why would I care? I come to realize as I've gotten older, like they matter a lot and they matter to almost everyone, regardless of if they think they do or not. Which is kind of a strange juxtaposition. In fact, the guys that say they don't care, in fact, do care, or people who say they don't care, generally do care the most. Not all the time, but that's what I've
found. Well, I mean, the whole ethos of apathy is cool, though. So, yeah. I mean, it's a mask. But, you know, everybody cares about something. That's unless true. They, like, you know, have psychological issues, in which case, you know.
That's a whole nother can of worms.
Exactly. But I mean, you know, your standard person, like, you know, they care. And you'd rather have, you know, pretty things around you, at least, you know, following your definition of pretty.
Yes.
You know, be that kind of like gothic and black, or, you know, bright and fluffy or somewhere in between. You know, you want to surround yourself with things that you enjoy the aesthetic of.
Which reminds me, I had a flashback after we were emailing to get this on the books, and I just remembered this today. But we actually did meet at NAMM, and I don't know if you remember or knew that you were talking to me.
I don't recall knowing I was meeting you.
We were at the String Joy shop. I believe you were there, and we were talking. We were talking about somebody's PCBs, and you looked me dead in the eye and told me I was wrong. Then I remembered, oh yeah, we have talked before.
Oh, what did you say? What were you wrong about?
I was wrong. Let me see, without throwing anybody.
I'm just interested if I was joking, because like that's my style of humor.
You totally were joking. I'm giving you a hard time right now.
Okay.
I mean,
if you're wrong, then I'm not apologizing either, though.
Oh, well, I probably was kind of wrong, but okay. I'm always wrong. I'm wrong the time.
How dare you?
I know. What a terrible person. I'm just going to shut this down. We'll come back to this
later. You know, as long as you admit it, that's the first step.
I don't even know what to do anymore. There's so many hours of me talking on the internet, probably saying wrong things. I just assume that most of my opinions are incorrect. That's just the best way for me to operate anymore. That way, when somebody calls me out on it, I'm like, yeah, well, you're right. I don't have to worry about it anymore.
That's actually a good way to let it roll off you. Good.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. But no, we were debating the merits of the attractiveness of this. Well, for the audience, this is how nerdy it gets at NAMM. This is how big a dorks we are. We were debating the attractiveness of somebody's circuit board layout. That is how.
Was it Electro Foods?
Maybe.
Okay. No, Matt and I, we go back and forth about this. We joke about it a lot. Like, I think they look, they like give me nausea the way he does them. And I'm not hesitant to tell him that, but we joke about it. Like, it's all, you know, it's all in good fun. I was down in Philadelphia the weekend before last, and I finally got to meet him in person. And so when I first met him, he walked up to me and I shook his hand. I was like, I hate your work. Everybody was listening though. So everybody was just laughing. I was like, oh shit.
I hate. Oh, hi, Matt. I hate your work. Thank you. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, but no, it was all in good fun. So.
Yeah, it is. It is all in good fun. I remember, like, it all kind of came back to me. The reason I remembered is because their PCB, like a layout they did, like popped up in my Instagram. I'm like, oh yeah, I did talk to Steve briefly, and he told me I was wrong. I said like that those layouts are not how, like, well, I'm not like I do layouts, you know what I mean? That's not how I envision a layout being, but I can kind of understand why somebody would find it attractive. And you just looked at me and said, you're wrong. And I went, okay.
Oh yeah. No, no, nobody finds that attractive. Nobody.
I do. My nobody. Come on. I thought it was kind of cool punk rock sort of way, you know, like a bad tattoo is kind of good sometimes. Or a pump cheese nacho is kind of good sometimes.
Nope.
Nope. None of that? You're not going to give me any of it.
I mean, people think that, but they're all wrong.
Oh, okay. I see how it is.
Yeah.
I see how it is. Well, we'll all figure out what kind of guy you are by the time we get to the end of this podcast, and we'll see if your opinions hold any water. I know what I got to ask you. We're just not there yet. We're not there yet in the conversation. That's
fair. Okay. No, I'm okay with that.
So switching gears a little bit. So if that gives you nausea, whose circuit boards absolutely do not give you nausea? Whose do you really like?
I really like and respect John Snyder from Electronic Audio Experiments.
Well, what's that? I know about anything.
Oh, well, I mean,
I'm totally kidding.
Do you know?
Yep. Yes, he's been on the show. Like, we're okay, homies.
He's doing a PhD in electrical engineering and is a, you know, BSc in physics. So,
yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But like I said, what's he know about it?
Yeah, exactly. I know.
Yeah. No, John's amazing.
Yeah, total casual.
So you like John.
I'm trying to think right now. I mean, there are plenty out there. The Moog boards are crazy from their like little mini Fugers.
And I've never seen them.
Fugers, I'm sure. They're intensely packed. I mean, I don't know if I'd want them to be mine to be as packed as that, but they're intense. Oh, okay. Another, like, I'm thinking like surface mount stuff in gridding right now, but you know, going in a different direction. Ken from Six Degrees Effects has probably the most beautiful internals. Yeah. I've ever seen ever.
Absolutely. 100%. They're so good. Yeah.
They're works of art. It's like, they just also happen to function as pedals.
Yeah. I have one of his R3 anniversary editions, and the first thing I did, because I knew, I was like, I'm not even plugging this in yet. We're opening this bad boy up, taking a look.
Oh, absolutely.
And he was 100%, like, he was like, hey, I'm sorry, this one's not as clean. And I'm like, it's not. Okay. I literally don't know what he's talking about. I'm like, it looks perfect as far as I can tell. So yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. He is it together. So his definition of not clean is probably, you know,
standard for everyone else.
Yeah.
So I need to ask you, like, what's up with Canada? Why is Canada like building all of the cool stuff right now? You got you up there, you got Millimetric.
We're all having fun right now.
Oh man, you guys are killing it. So killing it with the guitars and pedals especially.
We're just having fun with our stuff right now.
Are you guys as tight knit as I mean, I know Canada's a big country, but it seems like, you know, there's a couple guys in Montreal. I don't know where Manitoba is in respect to that, unfortunately. I'm sorry. I'm not good Manitoba, at my geography.
Like the literal center of Canada is just like maybe a couple kilometers outside of Winnipeg. So we're right in the middle.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So do you guys get to really meet
nothing
up
on either side?
Oh, nothing? Just wasteland?
Oh yeah, no, little vast swaths of nothing. But I mean, that's most of Canada. Like, there's a few really densely populated regions, but they're quite disparate. You know, they're not close together.
That's true. That's true.
So I mean, I met a few. Like, I met Scott from Montreal Assembly at NAMM. Yes, NAMM. And let's see, other Canadians. I'm sure I met another Canadian there, but no, can't think of any.
You met a Oregonian via Canada, probably. Solid Gold had a board there, but Alex is from Portland, so that's not exactly the same thing.
Same case as me and you. I think if we met, I don't recall, you know, us acknowledging who each other were or anything. So yeah, we might have spoken, but I don't think I met him.
Yeah. This is such a weird industry, because like you said, you met people at NAMM, and it's like I didn't meet like Jack DeVille. He's local to me, very close. We know each other pretty well now, but the first time I met him was in Anaheim. He lives like 15 miles from my house.
So it's beautiful. Like,
it's one of those things.
Hilarious. Yeah, travel to a different state to meet somebody who's just like your neighbor.
Yep, happens all the time.
Yeah,
especially.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm going to Montreal for Sonor in, I guess it's next month, and so I'll be meeting a few, you know, quite a few more of them. Like Seb from Ground Control, it's going to be there for sure.
You got to say hi to Florian for me while you're there. He helps put that together, right?
Yeah. I believe he's in charge of it. I could be wrong with that though.
That'd be Florian from Millimetric Instruments for all.
Yes, that's correct. It's correct. I'm terrible with names, so
he's been on a couple times, and I have one of his guitars, and they're brilliant. So
oh really?
Yeah.
I've heard he's got quite the waiting list these days.
Yeah, I got really lucky and found him fairly early, and the exchange rate was extremely favorable, so it was like a no brainer not to, and ordered the. It's actually the first baritone that he made.
That's pretty special.
His work is, it's so nice. His fretwork is like so beautiful. I could just look at it.
I was really impressed when I first came across him, because like, you know, you think guitars have been around forever. There's no like new aesthetic, but he really has an aesthetic. Like you can tell one of his guitars right away.
Yeah. And I get it. Like they're not for everybody. Like it's definitely polarizing to a lot of people, and he knows it. But for me, especially the single cut, slightly offset, I always get his numbers mixed up. They're all numbers, and I can't remember which one's which. But it's just
like all his models are numbers.
Yeah, it's like an M. It's like M, MG, I don't remember. I'm going to butcher it, and he's going to be so mad at me because I know he listens.
But, I know how he feels. I'm the same way. All my pedals are numbers.
I don't. I can't hardly remember birthdays. Numbers are not my thing. But if it was called like the Dragon Slayer, I would super remember that. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about this the other day. How long have you been doing pedals like as your main source of income or your main thing? How long has that been?
Since the beginning of March this year.
Okay, so pretty recently then.
Yeah. I put in my notice at my full-time job at the beginning of February, and they're like, all right, can we keep you until beginning of March so we can get somebody else trained? And so, yeah. Yeah, I was in charge of a pretty big project, so kind of had a lot to explain and prepare. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Did you feel pretty good about that, or was that a little bit nerve-wracking, or how was that process for you?
Well, I mean, it had been in the back of my head for a few months at that point. At that time, my waiting list was at 200, and, I would do a batch of 10, and I was doing this all on my, nights and stuff, doing batch 10 every 2 weeks, and, by the time I had finished that, the waiting list was back at 200. It's like, well, this is just unsustainable. So, I don't know, I kind of started thinking, it's starting to look, really dumb not to jump on this opportunity, especially since I enjoy this way more.
Right.
Yeah. It was nerve-wracking for sure. Like, it always will be to make a big life change like that. But, I was fairly confident in it too. So, yeah.
And I've always been kind of interested in the entrepreneurship side of things and paying attention to that stuff. And so, for me, it was always, I felt like once I got into it, that was probably going to be the natural endpoint was me leaving my job I was at, and it was never as scary as I anticipated. I mean, obviously there's some level of nerves with anything that you do, but I expected to be terrified to quit my job because I'd worked for somebody else forever. That's all I ever planned on doing. That's all I knew I was going to do when I set out as a career. And
yeah, for sure.
So to just throw that, not throw it away, cause I could always go back to it, but to just kind of be like, well, never mind. And just go off into the wilderness. It wasn't as scary as I thought it would be. That's been my experience with it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, every day you're still the same person. You still, you're still there with yourself. And, unless you have a lot of anxiety about it, it's pretty easy to live one day to the next and just kind of see it through as it goes.
Do you have any input or maybe some suggestions for somebody who's trying to also make that leap?
If they're ready to make that leap, they're probably in a pretty good place already. If they're trying to work their way up to it, that's different though.
It's definitely different.
If they're already at the point where they're thinking about making that leap, I'd just tell them to look at it and see if it seems reasonable. At the rate I was going, I like making pedals. I had about enough work for another 6 months if nobody signed up for on my waiting list after that. And I figured, that's reasonable. That's a good time, to kind of test the waters and see if it works out or not. And I mean, with my education and background and, job, it wouldn't look terrible on a resume to have this as, a thing on my resume. So,
That's true.
No harm done.
That is true.
So it's a bit tougher if it's not your, background or education or job.
Right. That's true. I don't know what I'm doing now. I'm not sure if it looks really bad on my resume or really good. Cause it's a hard right turn. So I'm not even sure if I might be one of those guys with two resumes because there's such wildly different, paths of work. It's like they're almost, it's strange to even consider them the same thing. They're so different. So I don't know where I'm going with that line of thought, but
kind of jack of all trades. So, if you're going to tailor your resume, there's lots of stuff you've got lots of stuff to pick from.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a wide ranging background. And when I look at it on paper, it doesn't really make any sense, but hey, I suppose that's life.
That is life indeed.
So I was curious about something. So like in all of this, you know, pedal building thing, I'm pretty sure you've had the same experiences that I have, but I'm wondering, was it surprising to you how kind of open and inviting this community was? Or was it what you expected, or what are your thoughts on that?
I can't recall being surprised by it, but you know, it was definitely nice to, you know, I was never at any point. I don't think I expected it to be as no. Sorry, I'm just kind of talking while I'm trying to think here. I guess I was a bit surprised. Yeah, a little bit, but at the same time, I didn't expect, you know, everybody to be super competitive and, you know, secretive with each other. But it didn't shock me, but it has been nice. Same time, like everybody's very almost community minded. Everybody along the same level, you know. And yeah, really friendly, really sharing. We don't think of ourselves as competitors because, you know, why?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's like you are, but at the same time, not really. This is definitely one of those rising tide raises all ships type of situation, at least as far as I can tell.
And yeah, I mean, there was always room for one more good one. Like, yeah.
Oh, I like that you put that caveat on there. Good.
Yeah. Well, you know, if somebody like comes out of the woodwork with something really popular and everybody's kind of like, you know, thinks they're doing something kind of original and unique, you know, everybody pays attention. It's not like, oh no, not one more to compete against.
That's true. So. That's true. Yeah. The good stuff that everyone gets excited about, the good stuff. Like, I don't think Joel came on the pedal scene and everyone was like, oh great, another one of those.
Yeah, no, definitely not. You know, it's kind of a situation. It's like, I didn't expect to get popular. I expected my thing to be like making a bit of money on the side, you know, in addition to my full-time job and not get notorious at all. But, you know, I was kind of most surprised by how quickly, you know, I got name recognition. And that was interesting to me. And I feel like, you know, I have no background in business. I have no idea about marketing. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm stumbling through this like completely blind and just like making happy mistakes that turn out to be successful. And it's kind of like, all right. So I've kind of learned to trust my gut on a lot of things. And yeah, like I said, no idea what I'm doing, but my gut is usually right. So yeah, who knows?
Well, but you know what? Outside looking in, it looks like you know what you're doing. So keep going with that gut. That seems to work.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I always have an idea of what I should do. So in that case, I do know what I'm doing. But I mean, I have no credentials in terms of like, yes, I have studied and learned and mentored so that I do know what I'm doing. It's like, no, for some reason, I just make the correct choices. And I don't get it, but I've learned to trust it. So who knows?
Hey, it's something I say on a fairly regular basis. I will 100% take luck over skill anytime. Give me luck all the time. I'll take it. It served me better than any skill that I've ever learned. Just being in the right place at the right time. It seems has been better for my life than actually learning things. Not that you shouldn't actually learn things. I'm not saying that at all.
And I mean, I really do like learning things on top of things. Like, I don't know. I try to learn everything, you know, do everything myself. Like I do all my own graphics and artwork and everything. So all the graphic design associated with my company, except for my friend helping with my logo design, Gabe Searles. He's awesome. But, you know, I do all that actual like artwork myself. So pedal graphics and everything. And I, you know, do the PCB layout and the circuit design myself and I assemble it myself. So, you know, I have a lot of creative control. And so I think that helps me, you know, kind of push things in the directions I want to go and nudge them if I feel like another direction might be better and I kind of want to just slowly get there. Yeah. Yeah. This is just me trying to justify things after the fact as to why things work.
Is there any point, I hear this a lot with business owners of various sorts, it's that one of the hardest things to do, especially for somebody like yourself, is to let go of some of those responsibilities. I don't, you know, you may not be to that point yet, but I know a lot of people, they get to a point where it's like, I cannot do all of this anymore. Like, I don't have
100%
capacity.
Yeah, no, I'm totally at that point and past it and kind of putting off, you know, taking the next step a little bit. But so what I've been doing is moving towards surface mount component designs, you know, just using surface mount components because, and doing that all by hand. Like I use tweezers to like place the components myself.
You're crazy. Yeah. Like Ryan from Dr. Scientist.
Yes, exactly. You know, I've got a little like retrofitted toaster oven with a PID controller on it that, you know, works as a surface mount oven. So do that. And yeah, I mean, I do that. But the idea is that once like I've gotten a design, I'm happy with like 100% and want, and don't feel like I'll want to make a change, you know, in a month. I can order like 200 of them to be automatically assembled. Because, you know, surface mount components can be assembled by machines with far more accuracy and, you know, accuracy, there's another word for it, but reliability than I can do, like by hand. So I'll just do that. So basically, I'm preparing things to go in that direction, like I'm saying, nudging them slowly, so that when I'm ready to take that leap, everything is in place.
I feel like that, and I think this is the tide starting to turn on that, but the whole through hole versus SMT stuff has been a debate for a while. And it seems
because
like
people are idiots.
I was going to say, it seems like the tide is starting to turn though. I think people are finally starting to understand that, like, in many ways, not in every case, but in many ways, some of the SMT stuff is A, better, and B, like, results in like a lower noise, better quality product in not every case, but in many cases.
Well, yeah, I mean, less wire. There's Schroeder traces and less wire. It's way lower noise, especially for high gain stuff. Yeah, I mean, there's literally no reason to avoid it. You know, it's welcome to the 80s, guys. This is very old technology at this point. It, like, I mean, like, everything you've ever heard sound come out of has been made using surface mount components, like, if you're 30 or under. You've, like, we're way past the point where, you know, we grew up with radios with through-hole components. So saying, you know, you don't like how it sounds, like, that is absolutely idiotic. I don't know.
That's a good point.
Like, yeah.
I mean, keeping in mind that some of the people who are saying that are listening on their iPhone. So,
well, exactly. It's like, no, at this point, like, you don't listen to anything through something with through hole components, you know. So I don't know. If your like pedal is the only thing with through hole components, like if your pedal has through hole components only, it is the outlier in your life as an audio device. Like, I don't know.
Your pedal's the weird one, is what we're
saying. Yeah, and I mean, like all the Mojo stuff I was saying before, I don't really buy into that for pedals as much. I mean, there's some cases where I do, but by and large, like, in amplifiers, I don't know, I feel like at a higher power, like, you know, context starts being more important in component tolerances and how components behave, like, at really high voltages and stuff. So, I mean, at a low voltage thing like pedals, it's like, whatever, guys, whatever. It doesn't matter.
You heard it here first. Actually, probably not first. Surely it's not the first time you heard that.
And I mean, I'm not the like end all be all authority on this. And I might change my opinion, you know, even a year from now. But right here, right now, like, it's by and large a lot of things that people are afraid of, like surface mount. No, it doesn't matter, like, literally at all.
I always say just use the right things in the right places. Doesn't matter what they are. That's the end of the story.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, honestly, I think the components used matter a whole lot less than the skill of the person designing the layout. You know, good layouts can be done with anything. And, you know, through-hole design can be superior, like, by far to a surface mount design, because the person designing surface mount design might be terrible at it. So, you know, there is that factor in there too.
So this is something I like to, you mentioned about layouts, and I remember like one of the craziest aha moments I had was years ago when I was listening to the original version of the Chasing Tone podcast before this other guy came on and ruined it. That's me. I don't know if you listen or not, but that's me. It's the other guy.
I was trying not to audibly laugh at you. Sorry.
Right. And when Brian was like, oh yeah, layout will change how it sounds. Cause in my head I was just like, oh, just the schematic matters. Like the way the electricity travels to different components. It's like, it's just, yeah, that's what matters. Like you can throw it on a board is what I had in my head for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, that's like kind of like the first layer of looking at circuits and, you know, understanding them at that level. Fine. But then you kind of get into other factors, like, you know, along with an electric wave comes a magnetic wave. So you have a lot of like electromagnetic stuff, especially in guitar amps. Like laying out a guitar amp is way harder than laying out a pedal, for example, because you've got like the power transformer in there that's just shooting off really like big electromagnetic waves that can very much interfere with, you know, your preamp circuitry. So yeah, there's a lot to consider, but you know, in low voltage things like pedals, there's much less to consider. But yeah, layout can definitely change how things sound.
I learned something not every time I record an episode, but almost every time. And I knew that it existed, obviously, but I never gave 1 ounce of thought to the impact that the electromagnetics might have on an amp circuit. I've never entered my brain before, ever.
Oh yeah, like your power transformer is always going to be mounted at 90 degrees to your output transformer, so that, you know, the waves go kind of like in opposite directions and don't couple to each other.
Yeah, I knew that they did that, but I had no idea there was an actual reason for it. Jeez, this is awesome. My brain is just exploding right now.
I mean, if they're facing the same direction, they'll kind of like couple onto each other. And I see each other, but I mean, the power transformer is way more powerful. So it's more like it's coupling onto the output transformer and you get some hum.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. And that's why like your power transformer is like the other side of the amp than your input always.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. This is all starting to make a lot more sense now.
Yeah. And I mean, like all the careful like attention to shielding, if you got shielded wire in your amp, it'll all be probably before the first preamp, like, you know, tube, mm-hmm. and maybe a bit after, but you know, after that point, the signal is big enough that a little bit of coupled radiation isn't gonna like, you know, be huge in proportion to the actual signal itself.
You're talking about the additional noise that would be introduced, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Any hum.
Gotcha.
You know, it's when the signal's really small that you have to avoid coupling that hum onto it, because then it'll get amplified in addition, you know, along with the signal, and they'll grow together. But as long as like you can keep it out for the first one or two stages, the signal is then big enough that, you know, it's kind of negligible.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So yeah. In regards to pedal boards, this might be a silly question and probably is, but is there anything outside of, you know, using a good power supply and good cables to consider when trying to eliminate hum, or at least reduce it as much as possible in your chain?
I mean, there are lots of like funny ways you can come across issues, but there's nothing like, you know, on a generic, you know, non case by case basis. No, you know, ground loops can be an issue if you've got a kind of non-standard setup. Sometimes wall circuits are really noisy, which is really weird when it happens, because you might not realize what's going on. But, you know, if you've got a really noisy board somewhere, like maybe you move into a new apartment and you're plugging in, it's like, why is this so noisy? Try a different wall circuit, like a different outlet, because some are just noisier than others.
And some have other things on the circuit that are causing it to be noisy that you can't get rid of, too.
That's pretty much what I think it is, but, you know.
One time, and I've told this story before, but it was quite a while ago, and I don't remember if it was on this podcast, but a friend of mine has a really nice studio here in town, and it was a freshly built studio. Everything was great, but he had this really strange noise and you know, he spent a lot of time and money and research to try to make sure that this wouldn't happen, and he couldn't figure out what it was. It turns out it was his electric dog fence that goes around his property was introducing noise somehow through all of the filtering and everything that he did. Somehow he was still getting noise from his electric dog fence into the studio, which is not something, I mean, it's almost entirely separate. Like the studio is on its own panel and everything, but somehow I guess that had an impact.
It's insane. Like there, you know, you never know everything. You'll never be able to figure out everything. Sometimes those problems are just basically black magic.
And that is true in life as much as it is in electronics as well. I feel like we're never going to figure it all out.
Oh yeah. And you don't always have to know the like final answer. It's like, oh, well that was the issue. How do we get rid of it?
Yeah, it's like, I don't care why. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I do care why. Sometimes I don't. Let's just make it go away.
And sometimes you don't want to care why, but you know that it's best if you find it out so you can avoid it in the future. You know,
that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that a lot with debugging like prototypes and stuff. It's like, I better figure out why this is happening. So, you know, next time it happens, I know what's going on.
Right. Or just don't do it.
Yeah.
Whatever the case
may be. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, it's way easier to just like, oh, let's throw away this board and try another one. But no, you know, sometimes that's the answer. Sometimes it's not.
Well, Steve, this has been a really great talk. You know, this has been, you know, despite you crushing my feelings and my emotions here occasionally.
You're still wrong.
I might be, but maybe I'm not. Who knows? Only time will tell. Only time will tell. And I think this is the point in which we'll truly decide if I can take your opinion seriously or not.
Okay.
This is the final question. What kind of pizza do you like?
Pepperoni and cheese.
Okay, I can trust your opinions. All right, we're fine.
Okay,
I'm wrong.
Yeah, but it needs ranch dipping sauce as well. So.
Oh, never mind. Whoa. Never mind. Pump those brakes. I can't trust you.
It's podcast okay. Over. It's okay.
Why are you putting ranch dressing on your pizza? Is your pizza broken?
I dipped the pizza in the ranch dressing.
Okay, why are you introducing ranch dressing into the pizza equation? What's wrong with your pizza that it needs
ranch
dressing?
What do you mean introducing? It was already there. It's part of it. It just, it's like, you know, some assembly required.
No. There was never, no one in Italy was like, you know what this needs? Weird, creamy nonsense sauce. Where's my Hidden Valley? No one ever did that.
Wait, no. Italian pizza? No, that's more like fluffy cake. Talking American pizza here.
You dip your pizza in ranch in New York City, you're liable to get shot. I think that's how that works.
Well, I mean, maybe. I don't really know the whole, like, you know, I don't know gun etiquette. I'm from Canada. We stab our people here like civilized people. Okay.
Oh, you're right. That is how Canadians. I thought you would just compliment each other to death.
Maybe, but like, I don't know. Like Canadian compliments are more like veiled insults and threats, you know.
Is that like so, kind of like this the Southern version, like the you know in Southern yes. America, like the bless your heart? You guys have that kind of thing.
Southern America is Brazil, I think you mean.
Well, no. Like Southern, no, that's South America. United States. Yes, Southern United States. You know what I meant.
Yes. Bless your heart. Yes, exactly.
So, what's the Canadian version of bless your heart?
Well, a lot of times, you know, sorry, well, you know, well, you're trying to elbow your way through a crowd or something. It's more like, you know, why you little?
So your sorries are a bless your heart in some ways. Or sorry.
It's context dependent for sure. It's just an all around, you know, useful phrase.
Interesting.
Yeah. It makes us look like we're very polite.
I mean, that is definitely my perception of the Canadians, is that you're very polite individuals. But now I'm starting to, this experience with you is starting to change that. I don't think that that's
Oh, the no, no, no. I'm a jerk. Yes.
Yeah. Man.
No, I'm not a representative.
You've ruined Canada for me. I can't go to Canada anymore.
I ruined Canada in general. So.
I'm going to get that soundbite. We're going to put it all over the internet. Steve Demidash ruined Canada.
Thank you.
Well, all joking aside, I had a great time talking with you, ranch aside, and please tell people where they can find you on the internet and anything else you'd like to tell a whole bunch of people right now.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, no. Instagram, my handle is demidasheffects. My website is www.demidasheffects.com. I get a lot of mileage out of this name, demidasheffects, as you can see. And that's about it. I mean, you can go on. I have a Facebook page, but I don't use it. People try to contact me there sometimes. And I'm like, no, my phone doesn't even let me respond to them. Kind of weird.
That's,
I should have that looked at.
Yeah, you should probably figure that out. I mean, you might want to, people might want to buy a pedal or two.
I mean, yeah, several people are waiting to buy pedals from me as it currently stands. So, yeah.
And so people get on that waiting list at your website. Is that right? Or they got to email you?
There's a page on my website. They basically have to read through the entire page, right? The details on how to join the wait list and everything. And I just make sure people have read that because I want people to be aware of how long the wait time is, currently about a year. When they contact me. So I have a few things they have to provide in terms of information. I list that stuff on the site. And if they don't provide that, I know they haven't read the site. So I tell them to go read the site. So, you know, if you message me, you're like, oh, where can I buy a pedal? I'm just like, you should read the site. You know, get back to me if you're still interested, because you're not going to get one for a while.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. I have a similar.
Yeah, I mean, I've got like.
If you try to join the Facebook group and you don't answer the questions, I'm not going to let you in. So if you've tried to join in the past and you didn't answer the questions and I deleted it, that's why. So you can join again, anyone who is listening to this and wondering why I didn't let you in. You didn't answer the questions. That's why.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good filter system.
It really is.
Primitive, but it works.
Keeps the riffraff out.
Yeah. We don't want any riffraff in there.
All right, Steve. Thanks. This has been great. And I hope you all have a good one. And as always, folks, good luck and good tones.
All right, there you have it. Another one in the can. I hope you enjoyed that episode, and make sure you go check out all Steve's projects and stuff on the interwebs. It's really cool stuff. I really, really like it, and you've probably seen it around a time or two. And if you haven't, well, feast your ears and your eyes. It's going to be great. Also, do not forget about the Autism Rocks raffle going on that the Effects Loop is putting on. Again, the link is in the show notes for that. But make sure you get in there. We're going to try to raise some money for a great, great cause. And you might win some free gear. Or not free, but really cool gear. So slide over there, check it out. And you only got 7 more days. As of when this podcast episode is dropped, there's only 7 more days. So slide over and check it out. And I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
One last thing before we totally sign off here. I just want to remind you that if you do any shopping at Stringjoy, that's Stringjoy Guitar Strings made in Nashville, that will help me out as well. As I've said for years, I'm heavily involved in that company, and I really do think they're making the best products on the market. So if you would like to try custom strings, go to tonemob.com/stringjoy and check them out today. I seriously, seriously, seriously love what the team down there is doing. I help them out with all kinds of things, and by you supporting them, you are also supporting me as well. And hey, you need some strings, so why not get some custom strings just for your guitar and playing style? Again, the link for that is tonemob.com/stringjoy, and that will take you right to their website, and you can do all your shopping through there, and that will help everyone involved out. So thank you very much. Talk to you next time. We are brought to you by the wonderful folks at Gun Street Wiring Shop. Yes, Gun Street Wiring Shop. I've talked about them before. I used to say based out of Bend, Oregon, but guess what? Sean moved to my neck of the woods. Sean's in Portland. Sean is awesome and has helped me with a bunch of stuff lately. And if you have wiring needs for your guitar, he can help you too. If you want to get weird with it, he can get weird. If you just need to spruce things up a little bit, there's your guy. He takes all the guesswork out of doing your guitar wiring, and he makes it simple. And his customer service is top-notch, and I can't say enough good things about Gun Street as a company. I really respect Sean and what he's all about, and the product is top-notch. I've got 3 different guitars that now have Gun Street harnesses in them, and I could not be happier. So go to GunStreetWiringShop.com and check them out.